Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, we are chatting with Doug Jones, private investor, well known to a lot of our listeners, as we do feature Doug Jones about every couple months just to get an update on his trading strategies for these markets. Well known for some of the companies that he has recommended and some of the ones that he has purchased in the resource space, including in energy. Doug Jones, last time we chatted a couple months ago, you mentioned that you were more or less clearing out a lot of your energy gains as well as a lot of your metals stocks in a more of a rotation fashion, and also because you saw those sectors having some potential to continue to move lower. That's definitely what we saw, especially to end that last quarter. We've gotten a little bounce back here, but more big picture on this rotation theme, where have you been rotating that money?
Hey, Corey Shad, thanks for having me back. Yeah, that's correct. I had exited most energy and was not very bullish on gold. I had said that I expect gold to bottom out around 1650, which happened. So where I've gone, I've rotated into lithium over the last 8 months, and had my focus names there have been performing very well. They're all up over 100%, which has helped mitigate some of my losses throughout the year as a whole across the portfolio. So now I'm sitting close to flat for the year, which is a good place to be considering the market. I also exited some real estate as well, which was a good move, and then took those proceeds and put them in US dollars, which have appreciated about 20% from then as well. So I'm looking at putting my portfolio together. I've already done my tax loss selling and rationalized any book gains against losses at this point to mitigate my tax liability going into year end. So what I'm looking at doing now is setting up my strategy for 2023, which is nickel, lithium. There's select oil and gas. It's a situation, copper and other base metals, like a special situation, like one large shareholder of Amerita Resources. So there's a lot of catalysts there. But the things that I've added that weren't there before is like Magnum Mining, which has picked up the Creon mine, which was a historic producer in the Sudbury camp that was shut down due to prices and was put into a private company with Wallbridge and Valet. And since the last public resource estimate there, over 90,000 meters of drilling has been done. And the thing about Sudbury, geologically, when you have these deposits like the Creon, which was over 20 million tons that was taken out of there, when you get a scale of a deposit like that in the Sudbury contact, more often than not, there is also a footwall deposit that is characterized as high-grade copper with platinum, palladium, gold. And a good analog to that would be the Morrison deposit that when they went into the footwall, they basically put together about 8 million tons at an average grade of over 16% copper equivalent over lengths of 40, 50 meters. So it was a very, very economic deposit. So that's where I've gone with some of my money. And with lithium, I see the current price environment persisting for the next 2 years before the supply response catches up to demand. Currently, we're seeing lithium prices for 5.5% concentrate around $6,500 a ton. So I have a scale in my portfolio where I have a developer and a more exploration company that is further ahead and a greenfield complete exploration. And all of them have done really well. Some of it is animal spirits. And others like Sigma Lithium, for example, it has a bankable feasibility study going into production in the next 3 months. Is justified completely on the economics because the NPV on that phase one and phase two is over $15 billion at the current prices for concentrate. And their stated economics is $340 a ton to produce it, total cash cost, and they'll be selling it for over $6,500 a ton. So it's going to print money. The payback on their initial capex is less than 2 months at current prices, and then they'll produce for over 20 years. And then when they add phase three and four, you're looking at an NPV north of $25 billion, which is just crazy economics, much like in Australia, you know, some of those hard rock producers there.
Well, Dr. Jones, thanks for kind of peeling back the layers on that and what got you interested in some of the economics and the potential of growth moving forward. I guess I just have a more general question for you. when you made the rotation out of the oil and gas stocks and out of some of the gold stocks, and you got into those lithium stocks, which performed quite well, and now you're looking at nickel for next year, what are the main trends that you're looking at when you make those kind of rotations? And because we have a lot of listeners that are in oil and gas and also in the precious metals, when would you consider getting back into those sectors?
Well, the things that I look at is, I look at the data, and currently you're seeing energy is gone from about 6% of total spend in the global economy to north of 13%, which means that you're going to shave off 6 and 7% off of GDP. And the only way to compensate for that is either you have to have lower interest rates or productivity gains. And we're not seeing that. So what generally happens, as we see, the Fed is raising rates, and energy prices are the most susceptible to that. So at the time, you know, I was looking across the sector and seeing what was the upside and the downside. I felt the downside risk was in the oil price because we're seeing an economic slowdown. And there was also political risk because we've already seen this being floated around by the U.S. government introducing a special carbon tax or a green energy tax on fossil fuel companies, as well as there could be the prospect of them banning exports to keep the prices low within the country artificially. So these are a lot of the risks that I didn't want to take at a time when I was looking at multiple, you know, gains of 300-400% in some of these names over a relatively short time. I would be looking to get back into them after probably, you know, sometime in early 2023, with the exception of there's a Freehold oil and gas royalty. It's a royalty company that I have an anchor investment in, and it provides an 8% yield, and their coverage ratio, they can cover the dividend that they pay monthly, is how I pay my bills, right? It has a coverage down to about $45 a barrel. They can cover their dividend. And also with that, with a royalty company in oil and gas, they don't bear the burden of the rising input costs because they don't drill the wells. They just get a royalty. And so as the companies who they have agreements with, they've optioned land to and whatnot, as they increase production, some to grow their own cash flows or to compensate for the cash flow margin being compressed due to the services costs rising, they still don't bear any of that risk. They get a percentage of volumes produced. And yeah, so that's how I'm looking at oil and gas, I guess. Yeah, it's going to be with us a very long time. I if I had to choose one or the other, I'd probably go towards natural gas more so than oil, just because of the the Nord Stream 1 and 2. I think we're going to see Freeport come back online in Q1, so there'll be more export capacity as well as more capacity coming online in the next year for LNG exports, which will cause the current prices in North America, Canada included to a small degree, to rise to the global price. So at some point, maybe we'll see gas stabilize at around $7 and $12 an MCFE, which is a very, very profitable place for companies to be. Yeah. So that's how I look at oil and gas. And as far as decisions to go into a new area that I wasn't involved with prior, with lithium, you can see all the demand that's out there. And politically, the amount of legislation and political will to push us all into this green economy, whether we want to or not, whether it's the economically the right decision to make. And in Canada, you're seeing many companies coming here. They're setting up battery factories. They need feed for that. So it's a good place to be. And the cost of lithium to a car is, you know, prices can go up even more from here. And lithium can go up 100% and then the cost of the car will increase 6%. You know, it's a small part of the overall cost. So you're pretty well insulated there. Yeah. So that's how I look at that. And with nickel, after the blow up on the LME, all the nickel stocks had run ahead of themselves. So I was just waiting for prices to stabilize. And I feel that the nickel price has bottomed. And looking at the actual supplies on the LME and globally, the production slated for 2023, 24, 25, new mines coming online, it should be a very robust market. And it's also tied to the energy transition theme. So to have a nickel asset domiciled within North America, where you're also getting a lot of battery factory set up and where you don't have the political risk of your supply being taken from you, much like Russia's, they may bar Russia's metals exports or have their volumes pulled from the LME, I think that's an attractive place to be, as long as you're getting at the right price, obviously.
So, Doc Jones, I'm hearing a lot about near-term production, actually. If you're looking to 2023, 2024, 2025, that to me means that these assets that you're looking at are more advanced. Is there a certain threshold in terms of build costs that you want to avoid or that you're more attractive to? Simply because we do have some fairly defined assets out there. It just seems like some of them are very expensive to bring into production.
Yeah, of course. Like when I did my due diligence on Magna and the Creon, because that was a historic mine, it already has the infrastructure in place and also smelter capacity, milling capacity within Sudbury that's available. I model that they possibly will go into a tolling agreement within a year of acquiring it because there's a lot of low-hanging fruit already in the mine. I think the CapEx to start something like that initially just to get cash flowing would probably be around $50-60 million, which is not impossible for a company of that size to do. And then the reward on the back end of that is they would probably generate, you know, $30-40 million in free cash flow a year doing that in for the first 3-4 years, which would give them the ability to self-fund their exploration as well as to fund some of the, if they decide to build the mill at Shakespeare, which they're permitted to do. So it says to me that there will be limited dilution as well as substantial upside if the deep exploration into the footwall is successful. But I know what you mean. Like, you know, in lithium, for example, there are these projects where these large resources are being defined in the middle of nowhere. And their stocks have been bidded up like crazy. But the CapEx is going to be over $1 billion. To get that thing into production. And people have to consider that. Like people go, someone's going to buy this out for, you know, X amount of dollars. And you go, but if you add in the CapEx, that's a very, very expensive asset for them to buy. And the price of lithium will not stay this high forever. So you should be modeling a price that is maybe half of the current over the long term and see what the economics spit out, let alone also the permitting risk. But yeah, it's a tough environment too. But the environment currently, because I think what you're getting at is that the input costs have risen quite a bit. So to build a mine is 20-25% more expensive than it was a year or two ago. So anyone doing a bankable feasibility study is going to be challenged to raise that money. That works in your favor if you have an advanced stage company that has seemingly a low cost production and low CapEx, because it causes other companies to delay bringing projects online, which leads to future supply issues when demand is recovering and growing, which leads to higher prices because the price of nickel would have to rise to incentivize people to take the capital risk and invest the money to bring on new production for the future. So that's why I'm looking at this particular company, because it seems to solve those problems that I see that other people will have in their investment thesis.
Hey, Doc Jones, always interesting hearing what you're doing. And quite frankly, your rotation trade has been spot on, especially early on when we started bringing you on the show. You're looking at more, it seemed like, of the metals companies. Now that has rotated out. And now I think it is noteworthy you are getting back into some of these energy metals and the energy sector, not just kind of old school energy in terms of oil and natural gas. Some of this rotation into the new electrical EV market, I think, is noteworthy. And I think we are continuing to see this general uptick in interest there. That's also being driven a little bit by what's going on, the issues in Europe. Doc Jones, always interesting hearing what you have to say. Thanks for sharing some of the companies you're in and your overall strategy. Have a great rest of your week.
Well, thank you, Corey. You and Chad as well. Take care.